I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, Episode 12. An Interview with Bob Tomlin, Part 2.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became astronomer.
In a world where it's always 1895, comes I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we discuss goings-on in the world of Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts, the Bigger Street irregulars, and popular culture related to the great detective.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Burke Wolder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Hi, and welcome back to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the podcast for Sherlock Holmes devotees, where it's always 1895. We're continuing with the interview we started with Bob Tomlin last time. We'll pick up where we left off.
And I think that your example is a shining one because it's been so successful, it's had such a longevity, and people keep coming back to it time after time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there are, I think, six Sherlockians who have attended every one of the Autumn and Baker Streets. And then there's a whole raft of people that have attended 16, 17, or 18 of them.
Sure.
We have a large following that comes back every year. And yet, this year, we had something like 12 new people that had never been here before.
That's great.
So I think that's wonderful. Yeah, I love to see the new folks come in.
Now, one of the things in my mind as I've heard you tell your story here is you mentioned getting 56 people at that first Autumn in Baker Street up in Bear Mountain. How did you actually get that many people together? What was your methodology? Who did you reach out to, and how did it come about that there were 56 people that were that showed up when you were expecting maybe 20?
Well, I was hoping for 20.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean,
that was ambitious for me. Actually, I went to Scion meetings around the New York area, and I sent flyers to several other Scions that weren't too far away. And lo and behold, of the 56 people that attended, 11 came down from Albany in the Altamont's agents group. And I was thrilled to death. That's, you know.
Well, they just came down to get warm.
You know how those people are. But they're wonderful. And they've been coming ever since. Not 11, but a group of them come every year.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting? You had 56 people at that first one, one for each one of the short stories.
See that? As long as there were only four at the next, they committed suicide.
Now, one of the successes that I know that keeps the formula going is that you're able to lock in some really interesting speakers. And it could be first-time speakers. You know, approached
absolutely.
Me to do one year, and I had never given a formal presentation before. And I remember you badgering me early on for the title and subject of my my talk so you could actually book it in the program.
I usually plan a year and a half.
A year ahead. And how do you pick your speakers? Who do you reach out to? How do you make that determination?
I don't know. A divine intervention, I think. I'm not sure.
Smithix.
There's something. But there's something guiding my hand. I don't know. I just have a sense that – and I certainly want to look for people that I know are good speakers. But by the same token, I used to teach public speaking and presentation skills and all that. So I know that very rarely does someone get the opportunity to do that. Hence, everybody is scared out of their wits when called upon to give a presentation or to speak before a group. And so I would ask occasionally people who had never done this before. And I know the reactions were always the same. I would say, I'd like you to be a speaker at next door to Autumn and Baker Street. The blood would drain completely out of their heads. And after I picked them up off the floor, they, what did you say? And then they, I would repeat it. And they, but I said, you can do it. You can do it. Trust me, you can do it. And lo and behold, they'd work on it and work on it. And by the time they got up at that lectern, they gave great presentations.
Yeah, yeah.
There's very few clinkers that we've had over the 20 years. Really.
When you look back on those presentations, Bob, who stands out? I mean, did, you know, for example, was Tom Styx ever connected to Autumn and Baker Street?
He once gave a presentation on Silver Blaze. But his shining moment in the annals of Autumn and Baker Street came in, let's see, it was 1983. We started in 82, but now we're in 83, and Cynthia Ween had paint, she hand paints shirts with Sherlockian themes, and she painted a beautiful one of my logo for Autumn and Baker Street on a blue t-shirt with black painting, which were the colors of the program booklets that I used to distribute. And I was wearing this when suddenly Styx got up, and he came up, and I was between speakers, and I was just about to introduce another one when he stormed up with this big easel. And I looked at him and wondered, what in God's name is he doing now? So he turned the easel pad, and on it were listed the years 1982, 83, 84, etc. And he said, this is just to prove that Tomlin can't count. So I said, what are you doing? What are you talking about? He said, this is the 10th anniversary of Autumn and Baker Street, but it's 11 years ago. It can't be the 10th. And I said, you, get out of here. Get going. Get out. He went back and a place laughed, of course. But before he did, he said, listen, all serious, all kidding aside, we've gotten a present for you. And it was this big cardboard box, and I looked at it, you know, and I was around him too long. I said, you think I'm opening this? You're crazy. So he says, no, seriously, go ahead. So I opened the box, and I started to laugh. And there's very few times that I've been completely at a loss for words, but I just couldn't stop laughing when I saw this. He had gift wrap half a toilet seat. Which, I don't have to explain the implications.
Which half?
Which half, Bob?
Somebody asked which half, and he said the right half. It's the right guy. So with that, Ben Vizosky stood up and said, does Tom get the other half? And somebody said, there goes your shilling. So that's how I recall Tom Styx at Autumn and Baker Street.
That's great. Now, you worked pretty closely with Tom within the ranks of the Baker Street Irregulars, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about your role and maybe some personal recollection of Tom, because for those listeners who may not be aware, Tom Styx was the, let's see, one, two, three, four, fourth head of the BSI, and was actually instrumental in bringing women into the organization when it had been a single sex club for so long. And he will be forever remembered for that magnanimous gesture. And it sounds like there was both a warm-hearted side to Tom, as well as one that could actually rib you in a few ways. Just tell us a little bit more about your experience with the man.
Oh, he was Jekyll and Hyde. There's no question about this. He could be as irascible as the very worst person. We were sitting in the lobby of the Algonquin one weekend, the Sherlock Holmes weekend. I forget, years ago. And an older regular walked behind him. And apparently Tom had remembered something that this guy did that annoyed him and started berating him at the top of his lungs. And I leaned over and I said, will you shut up? Who do you think you're talking to? This guy's about 75 years old. Well, and then he finally realized where he was and he calmed down. But yeah, he could blow off like you wouldn't believe. But he was probably the most good-natured guy I've ever met. Mm. He was generous to a fault, and he would do anything for you. But getting back to things that things that I remember about him, when he became Wiggins, I became Cartwright, and John Bennett Shaw became Simpson. Because prior to, well, the first leaders of the BSI, there were three. And then there was one, Julian, and then, Edgar Smith, then Julian. They were ran it alone. But when Tom took over, he's decided to go back to the three-officer format. So Shaw would handle all the correspondence of the BSI. And my job, I always said that my job was to be a buffer between Tom and the membership. And Shaw said, "You're right, that's all we do." We didn't know whether he'd kill them or they'd kill him first. Let's just keep them apart, and that's the way. But he was wonderful fun to be with. He would often have parties at his house, and big dinner parties, and he was a wonderful host, he and Dorothy. And Dorothy, by the way, became the unofficial photographer of the Baker Street Irregulars, and she is now in the process of putting together albums and a pictorial history for the Harvard Baker Street
Trust.
Collection.
Right, right.
The Trust.
The Trust, yes. Let's see. Let me tell you about Tom. When he took over, it was decided that he'd run the dinner and I'd run the cocktail party. So I would often say, "I wonder what I have to say tomorrow." You know, I didn't have to worry about material, because at the dinner, well, at one dinner, he said, when he was addressing the group, he was reading something and he said, "And this will help us to keep green the member." Sherlock Holmes.
I've heard of green thumbs, but
I roared my head off. Of course, the next day, that was part of my comments from the lectern at the cocktail party. Unbeknownst to Tom, I had contacted Jeff Decker, and I was the Schlockian artist. And I said, "Jeff, I want you to paint me a picture. I want you to picture a picture of Sherlock Holmes addressing BSI in tuxedos. And I want a picture of Styx kneeling in front of him, painting his crotch green." And Jeff Decker painted, it was his favorite picture. And when Tom died, I tried to get it, but his son wanted it.
Oh, sure.
So his son has that painting. But he laughed his head off, because the next year he said, "We're going to keep green the mammary." And, of course, gales of laughter.
You know, some folks might not know that Tom followed in his father's footsteps in his interest in Sherlock Holmes. And,
oh, yes.
And Tom Styx Sr. himself was a great irregular.
Yeah, the Darlington substitution scandal.
That's right.
Yeah. And his grandson had the same investiture. But Tom was the Norwood builder before he became Wiggins. Yeah.
Because
but he was a wonderful
Norwood,
guy.
New Jersey. Yeah.
In Norwood, New Jersey, yeah. He was a terrific guy. He was a dear friend, and I really miss him.
And speaking of dear friends, tell us a little bit about Bill Schweikert. I know you mentioned him before, and he's written this poem that I certainly am familiar with. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Bill, how you came to know him, and the evolution of the poem.
I became a member of the Three Garadebs one meeting after Bill did. It was three or 6 months, I forget what it was. But, he became a member just before I did. And this fellow, Bruce Kennedy, used to run the Garadebs. And it was at the, I think it was the 1981, yeah, the 1981 dinner up at the Culinary Institute. We were standing out in the yard, in the outside, having cocktails, and Kennedy came up to me and said, "I want your permission to resign from the Garadebs." I said, "What? What did you say? What are you talking about?" And he said, "I'm not going to be with the Garadebs anymore." I said, and just then they called us into dinner. I didn't have a chance to chat with him about this. Well, to make a long story short, he didn't. So I called Bill and said, you know, this guy's gone. You want to take over? He said, well, why don't we both? So we both ran the Garadev for, oh, I think 12 years. And we found that we had a great working relationship. Mm. Bill was probably the sweetest man you could ever meet. He was a retired executive vice president of the New York Bank for Savings. And he was just such a fine gentleman and a good friend that, you know, you had to love the guy. Well, the kind of guy he was, you couldn't give him anything. It was one of the quirk of his. when the patches came out, the BSI patches, I said, let me have two of them. I'll give one to Bill. So I bought two of them, and I gave one to Bill Schweigert. And Bill said, oh, thank you. I'll have to give you. I said, no. Yeah. Bill, you don't have to give me anything. This is a gift, period. Okay. About a month went by, and at our next meeting, he said, Bob, this is for you. And a big 8.5 by 11 envelope. I said, okay, thank you. You know, I didn't know what it was, but we were planning the next Garadev meeting. And when I got home, there it was, the manuscript for A Long Evening with Holmes. I was overwhelmed. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing here. And we had a perfect balance. We never argued over what material should be covered. If he didn't care for something I suggested, he'd say so, and I'd say, okay, we'll drop it, and vice versa. He didn't like getting up and doing the MC and all that stuff, but I did. I loved it. He liked the background stuff. He was a banker, so he did all the finances, and he loved that, and I loved doing what I was doing. It was a perfect marriage to run a science society.
It sounds like.
And then when he it was perfect.
Yeah.
And then when he passed away, there was a great, great hole in the Garadevs. It was just never been the same since. He was just almost too good to be true. I just remember something funny. He would read it at every Garadev meeting. And he'd stand up, and I used to sit next to him. And he'd start reading, and I'd be mouthing it with him. And oftentimes, he'd make a mistake. And I'd look at him, and I'd say, it doesn't go like that, Bill. And then he'd say, oh, okay. And he'd read on again. But charming guy. And I just want to extol this poem just a little bit because it perfectly reflects how we all feel about Sherlock Holmes. Mm. It gets right inside your head and your heart, and you just know this is right. I would guess the first 10 or 15 times, or even more than that, I couldn't recite this without tearing up at the end. I could barely voice the last line or two.
Yeah, and I've actually been witness to that. I think maybe my first Ottoman Baker Street meeting, or maybe one of the first ones after Bill
BSI,
died.
Yeah.
Oh, that too. Yeah. I witnessed you kind of choking up, and you can tell how much Bill's relationship with you meant, and also how much this particular work means to you personally. You know, from just reading it, as well as your relationship with your good friend Bill Schweikert.
Yeah, it's true. It's got me on two different levels, and it's just right there. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it sounds like Bob that so much of your Sherlockian hobby here has been tied up in relationships with people that Terry would be hard pressed to throw out the effluvia of this hobby, since they're people and not things.
And, you know, not too many people know she was a sister to Calpurnia.
Effluvia?
Yeah.
I thought you meant Terry.
No.
So did I.
Yeah. Now, and to me, that strikes a chord of something Bert and I often discuss, that this pastime is mostly about relationships. It's not necessarily about books or things or even the studies. It's about how we relate to our fellow man and our fellow men and women in the pursuit.
Yeah.
Well, it's true. You know, it's in our, you know, as we've been doing this podcast, we've talked about so many things, about books, about Conan Doyle, about his life and time, about what's attractive to us in the character, and the ability to share that with other people who also enjoy the same things is, I think, a defining hallmark of this pursuit.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah, I'd like to say one thing before we jump off. Talking about things that are really important. Teresa has been by my side throughout all of this. She has helped me immeasurably, not just in my personal life, you know, my outside life, but my Sherlockian life. She doesn't care about Sherlock Holmes. Mm. She's not interested in Sherlock Holmes. But she's come with me to every meeting. She's been an absolute general factotum at all of the Autumns in Baker Street and has done so much, not just for me or for Autumn in Baker Street, but for the Baker Street Irregulars when I was in the office of Cartwright. It's amazing what she did. In fact, it got her the award of the Queen Victoria Medal. She's just been absolutely spectacular. And it's easy for me because I love this this hobby of ours. But she doesn't, yet she does all this stuff anyway. And I think that's top of the line. Doesn't get any better than that.
Well, and one of the future shows that we're planning on doing is kind of a survey of speaking with Sherlockian spouses. And it may be for spouses that share the hobby, those like Terry who don't share the hobby, but you know, are interested in the personal aspect and ensuring that everything goes off well, and all the way over to the other end of the spectrum, those that have no interest in the hobby or even participating, kind of get an overview of how that affects people's lives and relationships and their interaction with their fellow Sherlockians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well,
that should be interesting.
We hope so. We hope all of these are interesting. And Bob, thank you so much for agreeing to participate and sharing so much of your own personal history with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah. And you're certainly welcome back anytime. And the next Autumn in Baker Street or whatever in Baker Street that gets put together, we will certainly let people know about if there should happen to be one. We will be there front and center, kind of cheering you on.
Wonderful. And if any of our listeners are working on events like that that we don't know about, please let us know and give us a comment. And you can always give us a comment at our comment line, which is
774-221-7323. That's 774-221-READ or comment at ihearofsherlock.com.
It's like a well-oiled machine.
There you go.
Ah, it's frightening. And if any of your readers or listeners would like information on or help in putting together one of these things, please put them in touch with me, and I'd be happy to share whatever I can with them.
We'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks for being with us, Bob.
You're quite welcome.
Excellent.
Well, that was just a terrific conversation. And as you all know, we typically end these podcasts with an editor's gas lamp from a past Baker Street Journal or something appropriate to the conversation. And Scott and I couldn't think of anything better to close this discussion with Bob Tomalin with than with him reading A Long Evening with Holmes, which Bob was kind enough to record for us.
I just want to extol this poem just a little bit because it perfectly reflects how we all feel about Sherlock Holmes. Mm. It gets right inside your head and your heart, and you just know this is right. I would guess the first 10 or 15 times, or even more than that, I couldn't recite this without tearing up at the end. I could barely voice the last line or two. So this poem that he wrote, A Long Evening with Holmes, it was first delivered at the 1984 edition of Boredom and Baker Street. And I make it a point to, we close every Garadev meeting with it, and I close every Autumn and Baker Street with it. A Long Evening with Holmes by Bill Schweikert. When the world rushes in with its worries and cares, and my problems and headaches are coming in pairs, I just climb in my mind up those 17 stairs and spend a long evening with Holmes. The good doctor greets me and motions me in. Holmes grasps my hand and lays down his violin. Then we sit by the fire and sip a tall gin when I spend a long evening with Holmes. And while we're discussing his cases galore, if I'm lucky, there comes a loud knock at the door. In stumbles a client, head spattered with gore, when I spend a long evening with Holmes. Watson binds up the client's poor face, while Holmes soon extracts all the facts of the case. Then off in a hansom to Brixton we race, when I spend a long evening with Holmes. The adventure is solved. Holmes makes it all right. Then back to the lodgings by dawn's early light, and a breakfast by Hudson to wind up the night, when I spend a long evening with Holmes. So this modern rat race can't keep me in a cage. I have a passport to a far better age, as close as my bookcase, and there on a page I can spend a long evening with Holmes. Thank you, fellows.
Thank you, Bob. That was
thank you,
well read and very emotionally expressed.
Thank you.
It's just beautiful.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as Bert and I did. If you did, please feel free to give us a call at 774-221-7323. That's 774-221-READ. Or leave a comment at comment@ihearofsherlock.com. Or a comment right on the website. Speaking of which, we actually have had some listener comments, and I'd just like to share one of them with you at this point. This came in on the website itself from Tim in Minnesota. Tim says, Scott and Bert, I have enjoyed the many interviews and guests you've had on your show through the first 11 episodes. The current discussion with Bob has the same spirit and entertaining camaraderie as your previous interview with Peter. I'm looking forward to your next show. Keep up the great work on your podcast, and I appreciate the links you post to websites discussed during each episode. Thanks. Well, thank you, Tim. As always, it's great to hear from our listeners to know that you're getting something out of what we're putting together here, that we're actually spending our time well. And I would remind everyone that you can visit the website at www.ihearofsherlock.com to check out those links that Tim was talking about. There's also some neat little features over on the sidebar of the page that you can take a look at, including a link to our Facebook site and something new I put together. It's called the Sherlock Holmes Social Network. This is hosted at sherlockholmes.ning. That's ning.com. It's basically a site that allows everyone to customize it however they want to use it. You can create groups, you can share photos, you can discuss things on forums, you can post your own blog posts if you wish. It's a way to continue to get engaged with the Sherlockian community, with each other, and to share ideas that you think are important. So I'd encourage you to check that out. And again, you can jump off of the ihearofsherlock.com page to that social networking site. As always, thank you for being with us. And until the next time, The game's afoot.
You know, I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I'm neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.